Roman Polanski's arrest at the Zurich airport on September 26, 2009, not only reopened his 1977 rape conviction case, it also reawakened memories of the California trial in the other person directly involved in that incident, Samantha Geimer. The 13-year-old who was raped by Mr. Polanski is now a wife and mother who has succeeded in rebuilding her life. Despite having been stalked by the press for over 35 years, she was able to protect her privacy and her family's. But now she has decided to tell her story in a memoir called That Girl, her personal response to three decades of interpretation of the events in articles, films, and judicial statements. It's published by Atria Books, and I'm very pleased to welcome Samantha Geimer to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You've said that you would love to never have to talk about this again, and yet here you are telling it 36 years later. Did you begin thinking about writing this in 2009 when Polanski was arrested again?
That's the first time I thought that maybe I should finally do that, this book, yeah.
Because you felt that the image of you had been totally distorted?
Well, the image of me was distorted. The image of what happened was distorted. And over the years, it's become clear that no one's going to stop talking about this. There's kind of no way to put an end to it, so I might as well stand up and face it.
How important is it for us to know that you actually began your life in York, Pennsylvania, not Los Angeles?
That's just the true fact about me. I was born in York, Pennsylvania, and a little bit proud of it, I guess. And
well, your mother was an actress. You'd been auditioning for roles in New York and in Los Angeles. Did you get any of them?
I did a couple TV commercials. So, yeah, I had some parts in community theater and a little bit of work, not a whole lot.
How did Roman Polanski come into your life?
My sister was dating a man named Henri, who was a friend of Roman's. So he was in our outer circle. And when he was looking for young women, girls to model, Henri suggested me because he knew our family.
And he was looking for girls to model for a spread in Vogue Paris. You were 13, so he obviously asked your mother for permission.
Yes.
What kind of photographs did he say he was going to take?
Well, he showed us the Vogue Paris with Natasha Kinski, and it was just a really beautiful photo layout. So it was kind of a comparison between European and American girls, was what he said at the time.
Hadn't there been rumors about him having some kind of affair with Natasha Kinski when she was underage? Had that reached you?
Well, we certainly, well, I was only 13, almost 14, but that certainly hadn't reached my mother or our family. And I really believe that kind of came out afterwards. So you'd think it's like common knowledge, but not until after what happened with me.
Did your mother understand that the pictures might have some sexy undertones, or did she think this is Vogue, not Playboy?
Well, right. It's Vogue, not Playboy. And, I mean, the pictures in the other Vogue Paris of Natasha were beautiful. You know, maybe a little sensual, but at that time, that was rather mainstream. So I don't think she was concerned anything would be inappropriate.
Was the lovely photo of you on the cover of your book taken by Polanski during the Notorious shoot?
He took that the first day we did test photos, so that's a few weeks prior.
So you met him, and you had a couple of meetings where you try to figure out whether you liked each other. Is that it?
Well, he came by the house, decided that he met me briefly, decided that he'd like to do some test photos. We did the test photos a few weeks later, and then he must have called my mother back and said, okay, I'm going to do like real photos and, you know, not test photos. And then we did the second and final shoot.
Now, the second one was on a hill near your home.
That's the first one, the test photos, yes.
Why didn't you tell your mother that he persuaded you to take your blouse off during that shoot?
I'm not sure. I mean, obviously I should have, but I think in my mind I kind of knew it was wrong, and so I didn't want to tell her. But I was young, and I, you know, thought, well, these pictures won't ever be in a magazine, that, you know, and I really wanted to be in Vogue Paris. So it was just a bad decision of a 13-year-old.
And here he is, a major film director, a famous international film director. I'm sure you had fantasies of following people like Brooke Shields and Jodie Foster into a major film.
Yes, they'd be, you know, my role models at that time of what a famous young girl would be. And I knew he was powerful, so I knew it was an important chance.
I know this still must be painful to talk about. Is it all right with you if we go into a little detail?
Sure. I'm very comfortable talking about this after so much talking about it all these years. Thanks.
On March 10th, 1977, the night that you were raped, was he acting differently around you in any way?
No, it was the way I perceived it. It was all business, all modeling, very, you know, not friendly or flirtatious. It just seemed like work until suddenly I realized you know, he had other intentions, but it came as a surprise because it seemed I was fine. I wasn't afraid. It seemed very businesslike.
And you were in Jack Nicholson's house?
Yes, we were there, and we stopped at Jacqueline Bisset's house as well.
Uh-huh. So that must have been kind of exciting for you.
I was a little bit too young.
Starstruck?
Yeah, well, I didn't know who Jacqueline Bisset was, and I knew who Jack Nicholson was, but I was a little bit too young to be appropriately starstruck.
So when did you realize something was going a little differently than you'd expect?
I really didn't know anything was wrong until at the very end of the photos. The last photos were in the jacuzzi. And then when he said, oh, I'm going to get in the jacuzzi, suddenly and obviously I realized, oh, my gosh, like this is wrong.
But he'd also given you a combination of champagne and Quaaludes?
Right. I was drinking the champagne for the photos. And because, you know, it's kind of fun when you're 13 to have champagne. I probably had no judgment on how much I should have drank and had more than I needed. And then he offered me the pill and I said no. And then he just offered it again and I took it. And I don't know why. I was just young and foolish.
Were you the only two people in the mansion?
Yes, we were the only two people there, and it was really kind of a regular house. You know, it's not what you would think.
Had you had any sort of sexual experience before this?
Yes, I had a boyfriend that I'd had for 6 months, and he was 17, and, you know, we were just recently had become sexually active, but we're doing all the things that you do as a teenager working up to that.
Working up.
Well, yes. I mean, we'd had sex, but just the once. But so.
Do you feel today that you could have stopped Roman Polanski?
I think I felt even the next day like, wow, if I just would have freaked out, I bet I could have stopped him. But, I mean, I didn't, so there's really not much point thinking about it.
My guess is Samantha Geimer, her book, The Girl, A Life in the Shadow of Roman Polanski. He, in his autobiography, he wrote that he didn't drug you, that you weren't unresponsive, that you did not respond negatively when he inquired as to whether or not you were enjoying what he was doing.
Yes, I think that we may have different recollections, but also, you know, I disagree and don't think a few of the things he said were true. But he was younger then. I think maybe he reflects on it differently now.
Was he actually forcing himself on you?
He didn't have to require, I mean, it did not require much force because I just didn't know how to say no. I mean, when I said, no, take me home, and it didn't work, I didn't know what else to do.
And then you were interrupted when Angelica Houston entered the house. Do you think that things would have just kept on going on if she hadn't come home?
I think it would have been the same. I think he would have just finished and took me home, and it was just strange that she came in and knocked on the door, but I don't think it really changed the outcome.
What happened afterward? How did he act with you?
I think he was surprised I was upset and didn't realize, you know, when he saw me like a little teary, I could tell he was surprised. I don't think he realized that I really was frightened and didn't want to do it. And I was also high and upset and thinking, why did I take that pill? And oh my gosh, you know, so.
Well, you were 13 years old,
right.
And he was 43.
Right.
He must have known that this would be a powerful experience for you, to say the least.
I wonder what he thought. I don't know for sure, you know, what he was thinking, but I think his attitude was that this kind of thing might be all right, and maybe people who are powerful and never get told no don't perceive that anybody might want to say no to them.
When he took you home, did he meet your family?
He took me home, and I just went straight to my room. He came in. He once again talked to my mother and my stepdad, and my sister and uncle were there. And then he started showing the photos, and that's when they saw the topless ones, and everything started getting pretty crazy.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll find out what happened after that. My guest is Samantha Geimer. She's written a memoir called The Girl, Life in the Shadow of Roman Polanski. It is published by Atria Books. Stay with us. Coming up in our second hour, a look at what life has been like for the small group of doctors who've continued to perform late-term abortions in the United States in the wake of the 2009 assassination of Dr. George Tiller. Plus, former Mayor David Dinkins talks about his life, his time at City Hall, and his take on this year's mayoral race. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC is supported by Holy Name Medical Center in Teaneck, New Jersey. Information on finding a doctor is available toll-free at 877-HOLY-NAME. Holy Name Medical Center. Healing begins here. HolyName.org. Newsies. The Broadway musical from Disney featuring high-energy dance and music inspired by a true New York story. Newsies plays 8 times a week at the Niederlander Theater. Tickets are available at newsiesthemusical.com.
The New York Philharmonic, performing Hitchcock with hosts Alec Baldwin on Tuesday and Sam Waterston on Wednesday. Classic clips from North by Northwest, Vertigo, and more with music performed live. NYPhil.org.
Start your day with WNYC's Morning Brief, a daily email that delivers headlines and top stories from the WNYC newsroom. Plus weather, interactive web features, noteworthy shows you might have missed, and news of exciting WNYC events. It's like getting a daily update from Sotirios Johnson in your inbox.
Good morning.
Sign up now for Morning Brief on the homepage at WNYC.org.
This month, the Leonard LoPage Show Book Club is reading Zoe Heller's novel, Everything You Know. Miss Heller has a knack for writing difficult characters, like the man at the center of this book. He's a hack writer who gets hate mail, a terrible father. He's even accused of murdering his wife. So is he capable of admitting his failures and seeking redemption? Well, the New York Times called Everything You Know an acerbic, sneakily touching novel about the rehabilitation of a monster. Zoe Heller will be here September 23rd to talk about the book and to answer your questions, but you can leave a comment or question about the novel anytime on our show page at WNYC.org by clicking on the book club. We are back with Samantha Geimer, her book, The Girl, A Life in the Shadow of Roman Polanski, published by Atria Books. So your parents it was your mother and stepfather.
Yeah.
They saw that some of the pictures were topless. What did they decide to do? First of all, they must have asked you what went on. What did you tell them?
Well, I was in my room, and there was like a quiet panic, and they just getting him out of the house so they could figure out what to do. And I hadn't signed a release, so they felt kind of safe, but we're still really upset. And that's before my sister overheard me saying what happened. So
you were talking to your boyfriend, and you told him that you'd had sex with Roman Polanski.
Right. I'm like, he made me have sex with him. And my ex-boyfriend kind of didn't believe me. I think he thought I was being dramatic, trying to get attention.
So your parents learned of it through your older sister. What did they decide to do after they heard the story?
My mom just came in and she's like, is it true? Did he make you have sex with him? And tell me the truth. And I said yes. And then there's just a flurry of activity. And she, you know, shortly thereafter decided to call the police. But I was still kind of like intoxicated. So for me, it's a little bit hard to remember.
So you hadn't really realized the seriousness of the event before the police actually showed up at your house?
No, I had no idea that it was against the law because of my age. I just was unaware of things like that.
And from then on, your life seems to have been consumed by articles in the press, time in courtrooms. How much of that do you recall? After all, you still were a kid.
Right. So I was, you know, shortly thereafter 14, but it started happening so fast and so furious, and every day that was just something else and something more. So I really had to just kind of cope, and I didn't have a chance to look back and think about what happened. It was, oh my gosh, you know, what do I have to do today?
And how did the press treat you?
They were terrible. I mean, people can't imagine this today, but, you know, everyone said I was lying or I wanted it.
You were 13 years old.
Right, but everyone said I was lying or I wanted it or my mom set it up. Even Judge Rittenband said in court, what do we have here, a mother and daughter hooker team? I mean, they were incredibly cruel and horrible. It's hard to imagine these days, but that's what it was like, and it was like that all year.
Did hearing or reading the word rape in connection with your name change how you thought about what had happened?
At the beginning, I didn't hear or read much. So they sheltered me from everything they could. But they, of course, explained to me that I was 13 and that made it rape and that I didn't want
it. It's statutory rape, even if you were a willing participant.
Right. And also, which I didn't know, and also that even though I only protested a little bit, that I didn't want to, and that's still rape. It doesn't have to be violent. It's rape both ways. So, you know, I had some explaining done to me about the way things work.
What was Polanski charged with?
You know, there was 5 counts. He pled guilty eventually to unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor, but I don't think I could list all 5.
And what was the basis of his defense? He couldn't claim that he didn't know you were 13.
Well, his defense was that it didn't happen, that I had made it up.
And for what reason? So that you could get some money from him?
Well, I mean, I think his reason for saying I made it up is because he didn't want to go to jail. So I could understand that part of it. So,
but you also lied in court about whether you'd had sex before. Why did you do that?
Well, because he asked me if I had had sex, and I said yes. And then he said how many times, and it had been once, and I was embarrassed to say that, so I said twice. And then here everyone's calling me a liar, so now I'm like, oh, my gosh, if I say I lied to him, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. So I stick to this ridiculous lie that I had sex twice because I was just scared and young and...
Well, 13-year-olds tend to act out under any circumstances. Were you overwhelmed by this? Were you acting out the way a normal teen might?
Yes, I was horrible. I mean, I was so angry at everybody. You know, my mom, my lawyer, my stepdad, everybody who wanted to talk to me. So I was really angry about everything I was going through. And you know, here's my poor mother just feeling the weight of all this guilt and taking all these terrible accusations, and then I'm being mean to her on top of it. So looking back, it's not my greatest moment.
You were examined by a psychiatrist.
My attorney insisted that I go to see a psychiatrist because his defense said I was unstable and wanted me to be examined. So Larry, I guess, thought that he would take me in and just determine that I was like normal.
And that's what the psychiatrist said.
The psychiatrist said I was fine, but there's no telling if I would stay fine if there was a trial and I was at the center of this, you know, what was promised to be the, you know, trial of the century. So
the trial was ended in a plea bargain.
Yeah, we ended it in a plea bargain, which I think everybody was really comfortable with and happy to do. And we didn't realize when we called the police how huge it would explode. This was before things like this happened.
So. Well, what kind of punishment did your parents expect for Polanski?
I'm not sure. You know, I never spoke with my father about it. I think once it started and we all realized what a horrible monster this whole ordeal was becoming for everyone— his punishment was probably not foremost. It was really a matter of coping every day with what was happening.
And they didn't demand a monetary settlement?
No. But one of the things everyone said was, you know, you just want money. So the last thing we're going to do is take his money or have someone pay us to speak to them because that was our motive as far as many people thought.
He wound up going to jail?
Yes, for 42 days.
And how did he get out? And then flee the country.
Well, he pled guilty and was supposed to get probation. The judge then saw a photo of him in Germany appearing to have a good time and was furious. He felt embarrassed. So he called him back and sentenced him to a 90-day psychiatric evaluation, which is illegal to sentence someone to that because they can't appeal it. And Roman came back and submitted and went to jail. And then they released him in 40 days, 42 days, not 90, which further upset the judge.
You write that this case was mishandled.
Yes.
In a lot of different ways. Did the state of California ever investigate the misconduct of the judge and the prosecutor?
To this day, the state of California refuses to investigate the misconduct of the judge or David Wells, and for some reason insists that Polanski must come back before they investigate the wrongdoing.
What was your life like after he left the United States? Did you still have to deal with the press?
After he left, it was good because I knew I'd be out of the news and it'd be a long time till I had to deal with it. So I just put it behind me and went on with my normal crazy teenage life.
But in 1988, you decided to sue Polanski. Why after 10 years?
Yeah, I had been secretly photographed and some really nasty articles written as if they'd interviewed me when I didn't talk to people. And then even in Hawaii, people would come and you sat in front of my house for days with cameras. So I just felt like I needed some help. I needed some way to protect myself.
And he's been painted as a victim in this whole thing. After he won the Oscar for Best Director for The Pianist, the whole scandal came up again. And many people, prominent people in the film world, came to his defense.
Well, I think it's normal for your friends to come to your defense. And he was really a victim of a terrible miscarriage of justice. And, you know, our justice system should work for people. Just because you committed a crime doesn't mean you should be treated unfairly. And he was treated very unfairly.
In what way?
Well, the judge...
He raped you.
Well, that's true, but he pled guilty. And when asked... went to jail, even though that was not part of the plea bargain. And then the judge, after he was upset about the 42 days wasn't 90, he said, directing the attorneys as if it was a performance, not like the way court's supposed to work, I am going to sentence you to an indeterminate sentence, which could be up to 50 years, and then said, but don't worry about it. You can go back to jail, come back in a few weeks, I'll let you out on time served.
In 2008, you participated in the documentary Roman Polanski Wanted and Desired, which was pretty much a defense of him.
Yes, I did that for Marina. Normally, I like to talk to people because I worry that they'll write something nasty if I don't. And I didn't know her then, but I did a very small contribution. And I thought the movie was really terrific, and she really laid it out well. And we've become friends now, so I'm glad she did it.
And have you forgiven him in a way?
Sure, I'm forgiven him. I mean, my gosh, so much stuff happened after that. Like, he's the least of my worries.
And then he was arrested again.
Yes.
Did that surprise you?
I was shocked. It was horrible. I was away on vacation, and no one, of course, gave me any notice. So I just knew, oh no, like, this is going to be terrible. What's going to happen? So I did the standard, called my house, told my sons to not answer the phone. And within hours, they were like, there's people out front with cameras, people in the yard with cameras.
Samantha Geimer will be speaking and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Hilton Hotel. It's at 54th Street and 6th Avenue. And then again this Thursday at 7 at the R.J. Julia Bookstore in Madison, Connecticut. The book is The Girl, A Life in the Shadow of Roman Polanski. It's published by Atria Books. And my great thanks to Samantha Geimer for being on our show today.
Thank you very much for having me.